Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gregor Robertson. We're here with you twice a week throughout the season for all the best reaction and analysis from some of the best football writers in the business.
Joining us today from The Times, James Gearbrand and The Times' chief football writer, Henry Winter. Coming up, we're going to take a look at Unai Emery's reign at Arsenal and ask whether things really have improved. Also, we're dipping into the EFL, but first, we're looking back on a strong week for English sides in Europe. Michy Batshuayi came off the bench to score a late winner at Ajax as Chelsea stunned last year's Champions League semi-finalists. Let's hear from the Chelsea boss Frank Lampard after the game.
It feels huge, which always scares me because there's a lot to do and it's just 6 points halfway through a group now and we play Burnley on Saturday. But I think we were entitled to be excited tonight about how we played. And it's a bit of a blueprint for us, you know, in terms of, I say, the work of the midfield players was outstanding. The work of the wingers was outstanding. The work of the fullbacks getting out to people, top players, and stopping them making passes and easy decisions was absolutely outstanding. I could go through them all. Kurt Zouma, wow, what a performance. So that's a blueprint. No excuses for them now to dip from that.
So that was Frank Lampard there after Chelsea's 1-0 win in Amsterdam. He suggested his young stars have come of age following that game on Wednesday night. But Henry, do you think Frank himself has come of age?
Oh, I think Frank has almost been born as a sort of, as a 40-year-old, as an intelligent, fully formed individual from, you know, the age when I can remember interviewing him at West Ham. There was always something about Frank. He obviously comes from a strong footballing background, perfectly educated, very intelligent individual, always thought about his career, never got caught up with headlines, was never too down when the headlines were down, and then was never overly up, you know, when things were going well. So he always kept things in perspective. I mean, it's interesting hearing him talking about the sort of this young team coming of age and all that. I mean, you know, we have to put into slight perspective, probably the best player on the pitch last night, and I was there in Amsterdam, was Cesar Azpilicueta, who's played 350 games for the club, captain. He embodied that spirit. Undoubtedly, he's been rejuvenated by Lampard coming in. Marcus Alonso, whose career looked like he was drifting, I think he's 28, 29. He's been terrific under Lampard. And then Jorginho and Kovacic in the middle as well. You know, they're not exactly spring chickens, but they're really responding to Lampard as well. So I think what he's done, he's got the balance right between the injection of the enthusiasm and the zest of Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham and Kurt Zouma and Tomori at the back and then bringing Reece James on. But also with that, sort of, you know, he's got some pretty experienced individuals there. Plus also World Cup winners like Olivier Giroud on the bench. So he's got the balance right, definitely.
He's got the balance right. What about the performance then in general, James, against an Ajax side who had been undefeated since they lost in the last four to Tottenham in the Champions League?
Yeah, I thought this was a really impressive performance, probably the most impressive performance under Lampard so far. I thought Chelsea played with real maturity. It was a really mature performance with a lot of kind of real sort of European kind of ring craft, I guess. And, you know, obviously in the first half they played, you know, Ajax probably kind of had more of the balance of play, but I thought Chelsea contained them really well, and the kind of clearer chances were Chelsea's. They created a few good chances by winning the ball back high up in Ajax's half. I thought Jorginho, Henry touched on, but I thought Jorginho had, for me, possibly his best performance as a Chelsea player. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, is Jorginho, when he plays in that deep lying midfield role, is he too easy to play through? Of course, he'll never be N'Golo Kanté. But in Kanté's absence, he actually came up with a couple of quite crucial interceptions last night. And for me, it was one of it. I thought he was excellent. It was one of his, I think, possibly his best performance as a Chelsea player.
Henry, what about Christian Pulisic, who came on and made a difference, really, as he drove Chelsea forward?
I thought he was terrific. And it was interesting that the American coach, Greg Berhalter, was there last night. I think he was there partly to talk to Serginho Dest, who is this sort of terrific young right-back, 18-year-old right-back that Ajax have got, who's played a couple of times for the senior American team, but is also eligible for the Dutch national team. So there's a fairly significant tug-of-war going on there. So maybe Greg was over just to sort of talk to him and see if he can woo him back to the United States. Mm-hmm. But in terms of... yeah, I mean, Ajax were sort of slightly... So what was your question again? It's a really good question.
I was asking about just the influence of Christian Pulisic when he came on, sort of driving Chelsea forward.
Yes, I was on the right continent.
You were.
I mean, Pulisic, I mean, there's been a lot of debate about him and a focus on him. And it was interesting what Lampard said afterwards. He said, well, listen, I just sort of blur out all the noise around Pulisic. Not being critical of Pulisic, but just in the sort of... You know, Frank doesn't get carried away by sort of headlines and what someone's supposed to have said. He just goes with his own eyes, sees what he sees on the training ground, which is Pulisic training hard, and bringing him on at the right time. I mean, you know, we were talking earlier about sort of Lampard maturing as a manager. I mean, his substitutions were brilliant. You know, Pulisic changed the game when he came on because he kept running at the defence. He was terrific. And then he created the goal for Batshuayi. So, yeah, I think it's a testament to Pulisic's character. He's still very young. He's still sort of coming to terms with the sort of the pace of English football, relocating to a new country. Obviously, he speaks the language. But, you know, this is a tough kid. This is a kid who left home in the States at 16, who does work hard. So I don't think people close to him, I was talking to some of the Americans yesterday, I don't think they were completely surprised, but they're obviously delighted that he's... You know, he's shown he can handle this level and fit into this Chelsea team.
Huge positive as well, getting a clean sheet for Chelsea. I mean, that's been a huge kind of fear throughout the season and an issue for the team. And Tomori and Zuma, that pairing, there's only been two goals conceded in the last four games now. And it's really hard to pick who the kind of best central pairing is going to be. Rudiger still to come back and Christensen as well. So... those two have really stepped in when needed and were really impressive, I thought.
Henry, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate
you
spending the time.
Okay,
thank you.
Take care, guys.
Tottenham kicked off the build-up to a mouth-watering Premier League clash with Liverpool on Sunday in some style. A 5-0 win at home to Red Star Belgrade saw Maurizio Pochettino's side return to form just in time, perhaps to try and be the first side to beat Liverpool in the Premier League this season. Well, after Tuesday's game, Pochettino was asked whether his side were back to their best.
Not really. In the way that I like, no. Not yet. It's going to arrive for sure if we keep going, working. But of course, in some period, of course, the energy, we show great energy, I think. And then I think help us to score two goals in 15 minutes. I think gave the confidence. And of course, our fans were fantastic because the atmosphere was great. Thank you so much to our fans. They were great. And then help us to, you know, to build that atmosphere that you need always to after to performance in your best way.
So Pochettino thinks there's plenty of work to be done still. But James, you were at this game. After that performance, do you think Spurs fans will have slept a lot better this week?
Yeah, I think Spurs fans and Spurs players and probably the Spurs manager as well. They just needed that. They needed a performance like that, didn't they? They needed a really convincing performance. And I think also something I touched on in my match report, you know, they needed to have fun. This is a team that, for me, over the past few seasons watching Tottenham, you really get a sense that when this team's playing well, that they, you know, this is a team that plays with real kind of enjoyment, you know, a real sense of fun. And that is obviously massively, you know, a sense of kind of joy. And that's obviously massively been lost. And that's why I think it's so important from a psychological point of view, this victory and this Champions League campaign, because they're not going to get that joy out of their Premier League campaign. The Premier League this season for them now, from where they are, is going to be a slog. Given the way they've started, it's going to be a long, hard slog to get back up into those top four places. The Champions League, so that's why the Champions League is so important, because, you know, they can, you know, they can get that kind of, that's where they're going to get that joy back, if indeed they are. And yeah, look, they played really well. A couple of the players whose status is sort of a bit uncertain and who are out of contract at the end of the season, Alderweireld out, who I think has actually been in quite poor form, and Christian Eriksen, were left out. And so you had a team that sort of looked slightly more like a sort of viable Tottenham of the future, which I think was important. Son was back, and I thought he and Kane were outstanding. And I also thought Tongi and Ndombele had an excellent game and really offered glimpses of not only what he can bring sort of in front of the back four, but also that passing range that he has, that real, you know, the real ability to pick a pass into the final third. And he obviously ended up with two assists. So, yeah, really good night for Tottenham.
And was it as one-sided as the scoreline suggests?
Yes, it really was. I thought, I thought Red Star were really, really bad. Just a really poor performance, which surprised me because they'd beaten Olympiacos in the last round of fixtures. So I thought they'd be a bit better. But defensively, they were just so bad and just were sort of really, you know, powerless to stop Spurs getting shots off. And there was a period sort of in the middle of the first half where I thought, after they scored the first two goals, where I thought Spurs slightly lost control of it a little bit, and Marco Marin, the former Chelsea player, started to exert a little bit of an influence. But yeah, overall, I would say, yeah, this was a really one-sided performance. And I do think, you know, Spurs are, you know, for all their travails and troubles, Spurs are comfortably better than Olympiacos and Red Star, and they really should qualify as the second place team in this group.
Well, Harry Kane, of course, netted twice on Tuesday. He's looking fit, strong, influential at the moment as well, even with Spurs on the sort of awful run that they have been going through, Gregor. Do you think he's the best number nine in the world at the moment?
He'd be in the conversation, definitely. The thing is, he's not necessarily just a number nine, you know. Mm. He's an all-rounder. He can drop in. He can be a number 10 as well. And he demonstrated, you know, the full sort of repertoire of his talent and skills in that game. A few sublime passes, and he's always got that killer instinct in front of goal. So, I mean, Tottenham need him firing at the moment as well, to kind of, as much as they started well, have started other games in positive fashion, but taking the lead in and then going a couple of goals up early doors, that just kind of relaxes everyone, gives people confidence. And it was, I agree with James, they did look kind of reinvigorated, and it's only one game and it was against a sort of lesser opponent, but it will definitely boost confidence. And great to have Lamella firing in all cylinders as well. If Eriksen is going to be a kind of issue through the season, they need him. They'll need Lo Celso as well when he's kind of fully fit. And they'll need Ali and firing on all cylinders as well. So, positive night definitely for Spurs.
James, where do you stand on the debate on Harry Kane? Is he a traditional number nine, or is there more to his game?
I think Kane, for me, has really changed as a player in terms of the type of striker he is. Particularly over the past sort of, I guess, sort of 18 months to 2 years. Do you remember he had that injury before the World Cup? And I think since then, he used to be someone who would take a very high number of shots in a game. And that side of his game has kind of, you know, he's someone who's shooting less often. And I think because of that, you know, his productivity dipped a little bit last season. You know, he didn't have another one of those 30-goal seasons. And for that reason, maybe you could argue he doesn't quite belong in the top bracket of goal getters with the likes of Lewandowski anymore. But as Gregor alluded to, his all-round game has really developed, and he's got those other strings to his bow. That little thing that he does where he sort of makes that run where he drops in between the lines and he receives the ball and he sort of sprays that pass around the corner. So effective. I mean, you know, he does it. We see him do it all the time, but he's so good at doing that. And he's actually, I think he's technically a really good passer of the ball. He has a lovely passing range, and he's still a great player, I think. even though he's maybe not, I don't know, we'll see him have another one of those 30 goal seasons, but he offers a massive, massive amount to this Tottenham team and also obviously to England as well.
I'm not sure. I think we will still see him
really
hitting those figures. Yeah, I think the intelligence and the variety of his finishes, you know, there was a little flicked header, nice movement, and that one from an acute angle where he kind of almost threw the defender's leg into the far corner. He's, you know, every type of finish he has got in the locker, really. And I think he could break all sorts of records.
Well, that brings us nicely on to the weekend's action then. It all wraps up with three 4:30 games on Sunday, which include Tottenham's trip to Liverpool. As we just mentioned, the 5-0 win was great preparation for arguably Maurizio Pochettino's toughest test yet this season. So, with all that in mind of what's happened this week, could Liverpool's unbeaten run in the league come to an end this weekend, James?
I think it could. I don't think it's likely necessarily, but obviously what Tottenham have, and it's so simplistic to say it, but they have so much talent, and that's what you were reminded of playing against Red Star. You know, these players are great. For whatever reason, there have been sort of, you know, dips in form, and obviously some of them, you know, there are sort of questions about where their head might be. But, you know, Harry Kane, Heung-min Son, you know, these are outstanding players. I did think Liverpool looked a little bit shaky against Manchester United, definitely not their most convincing performance. It'll be interesting to see how Tottenham play, because I think what Manchester United did by sort of playing quite defensively and sort of denying Liverpool that space, I don't think Liverpool dealt with that well, but I don't know, it'd be interesting to see how Tottenham play and whether it'd be a more open game than that one was.
Yeah, that was what I was going to, with you talking the way you were, can you actually expect Tottenham to go to Anfield and play a more defensive game?
Yeah, I think they will. I think, you know, Pochettino often has done that in the past, and I think, you know, denying Liverpool the front three some space as much as they possibly can anyway is going to be key for them. From Liverpool's point of view, I think, you know, it's interesting. You just look at the options they have in midfield now. All of a sudden, it was, you know, in the past it was, this is just the engine room, but now there seems to be just because of the last couple of games, there seems to be a sort of more of a focal point on having some form of creativity from there, which players like Henderson don't necessarily provide. Obviously, Oxlade-Chamberlain had a really positive night, and Naby Keita back to fitness had a good cameo at Old Trafford. So,
and Adam Lallana as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So they've got options there now, and I think it might happen that the longer the season progresses, that might become more and more important as teams sort of try and deny the front three space, and from that point you need creative players around the edge of the box able to work those little opportunities that from which the goal came at Old Trafford.
I think there are so many interesting calls for Pochettino to make, because I think the 4-2-3-1 I think worked really well against Red Star, but does he go back to a three-man midfield potentially? Does he bring Harry Winks back in? Does he keep Lamella in the starting lineup, who I thought played really well against Red Star? Does Aldevara come back in? You know, you'd say that Aldevara and Vertonghen is obviously at its best, is clearly the strongest defensive partnership, but I think Aldevara's been really out of form, and obviously they may want to, you know, Pochettino may just want to move on from him, just more from a kind of, you know, a sort of mood standpoint more than anything else. It'll be really interesting to see what team he goes with, because I don't think he's quite settled yet on this season on what his strongest team is.
Do you think any team will take sort of inspiration from the way Manchester United set up against them at Old Trafford?
I mean, yeah, to an extent. I think it kind of worked what Manchester United did, didn't it? I mean,
it stifled them, didn't it?
To an extent. I think Manchester United this season playing very, very counter-attacking style, and they kept the game very tight, and it basically worked until, of course, you make one mistake and obviously, you know, they consider that back post tap into Lallana, and that's the danger of sort of, you know, of trying to play that way. I don't know. And obviously the other thing that was interesting is that Manchester United played with that 3-5-2 system against Liverpool, and that kind of caused them a few issues, because you had the wing backs who I thought pushed up quite successfully in the first half and slightly nullified Robertson and Alexander Arnold.
Just quickly touching on what you said about the creativity and the creative options Liverpool could have going forward with those players that you mentioned coming back into the reckoning, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Lallana and Keita, but in particular on Oxlade-Chamberlain and Lallana. But it was a great performance from Oxlade-Chamberlain against Genk. Do you think we will see him in a Gareth Southgate England squad anytime soon? And is he the answer to some of the problems England have had in midfield, Gregor?
I think we will definitely see him in the England squad because, you know, Gareth Southgate's already shown his sort of desire really to have him, and he was perhaps fortunate to be in the England squad earlier in the season. Mm. So Oxlade-Chamberlain at full strength and playing at his best is a really positive addition to any team because he's a very modern midfielder in that position, and he can drive forward with the ball at his feet. He can arrive late in the box. He can score from outside the box, and he's got a kind of creative instinct as well. So I think he would definitely figure in Gareth Southgate's thinking. And of course, first of all, he has to tie down a place in Liverpool's team. And it was interesting to hear Jurgen Klopp kind of temper the people's praise about him, obviously having had a good night on front of goal, but saying that his performance was a little bit like the rest of the teams. There was some really good moments, but still a lot to work on. I think he wasn't entirely pleased with the display.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, Sheffield United picked up a stunning win over Arsenal to move into the top half of the Premier League table on Monday. Luis Moussaï marked his first start for the Blades with the decisive goal in the 1-0 win as Arsenal missed out on moving up to third. Now, Arsenal's £72 million signing, Nicolas Pepe, had earlier skewed a golden chance wide from 6 yards, and fans have started to vent. They've started to show their frustration towards the record signing. Gregor, have you seen any positives from Pepe?
A few. Mm. He's undoubtedly a talented player. Really, really quick. Got good feet. I don't know, it was interesting to hear Patrice Evra in the Sky Sports studio just saying this is a big move from France to the Premier League. Kind of the speed of the game, the physicality of it. You've got to show some patience with him, I think. I think there's truth in that. But there is glimpses. You know, there was one moment where he kind of fashioned the yard for himself, cut inside and whipped a shot just wide of the post. You know, he's just not quite kind of calibrated himself.
Well, I didn't think it was the worst performance I've ever seen from him. There was a lot of endeavour, shall we say, but it didn't really ever come to anything.
No, I mean, he's undoubtedly got potential. And look, I think there's plenty of other players that you could pick out. I know he's a huge sign, £72 million pounds. But Arsenal, he's playing in a team as well that really, I don't know, there's been moments where you think there's progress and then the majority of the time you think there's not, and it's kind of, what's their identity really? There's not, I think that was the thing that was most sort of chastening for Arsenal fans was that they went to Sheffield United, who'd just come up from the Championship, with a 52-year-old who was managing Northampton Town 5 years ago at the bottom of the League Two as manager, and he looked like he comprehensively outthought Arsenal and their manager and the way he set the team out. And I don't think that's the first time we've seen that this season either. I think he's not really able to change games when things aren't going right for them. He's not able to throw someone on. I mean, Lacazette came on and yeah, he should be starting if he's fit, obviously. But he's not really been able to affect games, I don't think, Emery. So there are a lot of things for Arsenal fans to be concerned about. And I think, you know, Pepe, it's early days for him. He's not at the top of the list.
I think a lot of Arsenal fans were quite frustrated with the lineup that he announced before the game. You've mentioned Lacazette was on the bench, for example. Torreira, a lot of Arsenal fans rate him. And obviously Kieran Tierney is on the bench as well. It was Klasanac that started at left back for this game. Just tell us, Gregor, if you're on the bench, does that mean you are fit enough to play, to start?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, in that if Kolasinac was injured, say, and there was no one else, I'm sure he would start. And you just never know entirely what's going on in the background and whether he's maybe felt some small niggle or injury. That often happens when you're returning from a long-term injury, something else, or the body can throw up something else, imbalances. And so you just never know. I'm sure they will be desperate to get Tierney in as soon as possible, but especially after seeing his debut in the Europa League, he was outstanding. Mm. And the sort of attacking threat he offers down the left flank, and Arsenal really could have done with him. So I'm sure we will see him very soon.
So there is potential in this Arsenal side, James. Have Arsenal shown any improvement this season?
No, I don't think so. Not this season. No. I don't think Arsenal are a better side than they were.
Are they worse?
Maybe. I do think genuinely there is real cause for concern at Arsenal. This is a team that is currently, after 9 games, is 18th in the Premier League for shots faced. I think only Aston Villa and Norwich have conceded more shots. This is a team that is so easy to play through. This is and as Gregor said, that there's also, I'm so confused about the identity of this team. Emery says that he wants to be adaptable, and that's fine. And we've actually seen that Emery can be a very, very good in-game manager. He makes good substitutions. You know, we've sort of seen one-off games where he comes up with a very good tactical plan, like the sort of the London Derby win against Tottenham last season. But you've got a modern football team. Mourinho was making this point on Sky Sports a few weeks ago. A modern football team has got to have... You've got the tactical system is one thing, but you also have to have principles that kind of underlie, you know, the way that you want to play week in, week out. And I don't know what Arsenal's are. Mm. And, you know, I could go on. There are so many. I don't understand why they sold Alex Iwobi, who, you know, last season was, you know, one of, you know, on Arsenal's team ranked, I think, top for, you know, either top or second for chances created. And expected assists. Alex Iwobi had a really good season. I don't understand. He's a good young player.
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, for me, they remain an enigma to me, and I still am unsure, you know, what kind of team Unai Emery is trying to construct.
You say it's a cause for concern, then. Is there a worry for Unai Emery? Could he last the season?
For his job?
Yeah.
I think he will last the season, yeah. And I do, you know, I think they will move up the table just, you know, purely on the kind of sheer weight of attacking talent that they have, which is really considerable. But long term, I don't see much progress under Emery. I have to say, I'm not convinced that they're, you know, a much better team than they were in Arsene Wenger's last season.
When you have someone like Jose Mourinho, Gregor, waiting for that next move, should Unai Emery be worried?
Absolutely not, no. I think, no.
Very succinct, can't even say it. That's producer Joe's question. Does that answer it? All right. It's time to dip into the EFL now. And Gregor, you've written a great piece for Thursday's Times. If you have the chance, read it online when you can. But tell us a little bit about it, if you wouldn't mind, because you've been doing some digging and found some managers ready to follow in Chris Wilder's footsteps after Sheffield United's great start to life in the Premier League.
Yeah, just thought after that performance against Arsenal Monday night, there was huge praise flowing towards Chris Wilder, and perhaps even just a little bit of surprise that this guy was as tactically intelligent, and you could see his work firmly imprinted on that team to quite such an extent, and which, as I said earlier, absolutely put Unai Emery's work in the shade. You know, as I've mentioned on one or two occasions, I've played for Chris Wilder, and he's always been the team has always had his identity. It's always been an image of him on the pitch. So he's done the same work in League Two as he is doing now, which just kind of got me thinking, what other managers, given an opportunity and a fair wind, could perhaps follow in his footsteps? I'd say the first has to be Lee Bowyer at Charlton. I think there's a case for him being sort of the most underrated manager in the country, really, because in his first full season last season at Charlton, he won promotion from League One via the playoffs, and he's got the smallest budget in the Championship this season, and I think they're a couple of points outside the playoffs as we speak. So, done a remarkable job, and all against a backdrop of, you know, huge unrest with the supporters because of their owner, Roland de Châtelet. So I think he's someone, and he's also got a kind of connection with that club, like, not quite to the same extent as Wilder, but he started his career there.
Yeah.
Johnny Jackson, his assistant, played more than 250 games for the club, and somehow he sort of reunited the fan base and sort of brought a connection back to that club that was missing for the last 5 or 6 years.
And that, as you say, is despite all the ongoing issues with the owner. And I quite like, forgive me if I'm wrong on this, but I love the story that suggested that kind of management fell into management because he was kind of done with football and was happy to just go fishing, so everybody says.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, he retired and had a fishing lake in the south of France. And then I think he hooked up with Harry Kewell at Watford.
I like your partner.
yeah, Watford's youth team, I think it was. And then helped out Carl Robinson at Charlton as his kind of number two. Carl Robinson left and he got the job, and he's kind of, now he loves it. So he's somebody definitely who I think has got great potential. And then looking elsewhere, there are people who I think have just been slightly unfortunate with the jobs they've had. I think Mark Robbins at Coventry City has done great work at every club he's been at. Rotherham United, who were in administration, or would have won promotion from League Two with them. That's where he started. Barnsley, Huddersfield, he was given pretty thankless tasks to keep them in the Championship with hardly any money. Did so. Scunthorpe United and Coventry got Coventry's first promotion in 51 years a couple of years ago, and won the EFL Trophy, 40,000 fans at Wembley. And he's someone actually who I've played for as well briefly at Rotherham. I get around.
There's,
you know, that's why
here.
They call me the journeyman. So and he's not dissimilar to Wilder in that he's got a kind of ruthless, steely side to him. He's a good coach, and he surrounds himself with good coaches and good people as well. So I think he's someone, even though he'll be 50 in December, he's got a really good chance as well. And I go on to mention one or two others in the piece, so if you'd like to hear about them, give them a read.
Well, that is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, James Gearbrand and Henry Winter.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online on your smartphone or tablet.
It is just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information. Have a good weekend, and we'll be back on Monday.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.